Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I'm joined by special guest G, who has founded the San Antonio Bitcoin Club and probably has the coolest Twitter handle on the block at Money to Be Murdered By. So be sure to check him out and the San Antonio Bitcoin Meetup, where they meet every second Thursday of the month. And you can check them out at sanantoniobitcoinclub.com. So be sure to check them out. We get into G's experience in the Bitcoin world, everything that he's got going on in there, and how he found Bitcoin, orange-pilling businesses, his connection with the Austin Bitcoin Club, and much, much more. Then we also dive into six current event stories. The Fed raising interest rates yet again. Former Coinbase manager arrested for insider trading. Three Arrows Capital's founders actually speaking out, breaking the five-week silence. The Senate eliminating taxes on $50 worth of Bitcoin transactions. El Salvador having the liquidity to avoid defaulting debt. And the stack chain movement started by Arizona and HODL. Shout out Arizona and HODL. So let's get into the show. But as always, it's not financial advice. This show is for strictly and for entertainment purposes only and should only be taken as entertainment and my opinion and my guest's opinion. So as always, not financial advice, not financial advice. Now let's get into the rip. Whoosh. Bing bong. I am live with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast. But before we get started, just to let everybody know, this is a road game for me. I'm at the Mining Disrupt Conference here in Miami. So I'm here in my Airbnb. I got a nice little map behind me hanging out. But I got a very special guest, and the content doesn't stop. I got G. He runs the San Antonio Bitcoin Meetup. G, how you doing today?
Doing good, boss. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's a little hot down here in Miami, but you know, I'm hanging in there. Not too different than I am and than it is in Tampa. But yeah, a lot of Bitcoin stuff going on down here. So how about yourself? How are things going in the Bitcoin world? How are you kind of feeling, just overall general sentiment?
And honestly, I mean, being in Austin, I tell everybody I'm a little spoiled. You know, whoever's here is a little spoiled. Just a lot going on. Got builders building everything. And yeah, I mean, right now I know it's a bear market, you know. We'll get into that in a little bit more here in a second. But I tell everybody, you know, after just reading and now building in Bitcoin, your vision kind of changes as far as, like, you know, you're not worried about, like, everybody's worried. You're more about building this thing or, you know, working on what you're doing. You know, they say builders build in bear markets. So, yeah, that's really what we're focused on right now.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think, like, you know, a lot of great products are made in bear markets, recessions, what have you. So I think now is a better time than ever to start building. And so on that note, let's bring it back a little bit. So tell us about your orange pill story. How did you find Bitcoin and how did you kind of get into it?
I was like 28, man. It was 2018. I had just gotten a job at a warehouse. It's pretty boring, but I had a real good boss. Really into finance, really into stocks, you know, asset classes, credit. So he got me into looking at all that. And we would talk about other stuff, you know, like things happening in the world, you know, things that looked funny. You couldn't put your finger on it, but you kind of knew something was a little wrong. And then he'd always tell me just buy Bitcoin, you know, make sure you buy a little Bitcoin. So I started buying some. And then eventually we stumbled onto Austrian economics. He got me into all that, learned all that. And then Bitcoin Miami came around, went to Bitcoin Miami. I was around a bunch of toxic maxis, but they were all cool. They were real nice. Everybody was just speaking truth, you know. I was able to get along with a lot of people, met a lot of people. It was an awesome experience. And yeah, once I got back, I remember hearing Max talk about liquidity problems, that in times of crisis, you see that in all markets, and the only things that's not affected are gold, silver, and Bitcoin. Well, they're affected, but the people run to them in crisis. So I got a little taste of that and just aped all into Bitcoin, and then found the Austin Bitcoin Club. And yeah, those guys just took it to another level. And yeah, then after that, it was kind of like, hey, is this going on in my hometown, San Antonio? And waited for so long, nothing was happening. And then, you know, after a while, they're like, well, do you want to do it? And it was like, well, yeah, let's see what we can do. So, you know, they've been a lot of help and getting things going. September, we're supposed to have break the ground to some tech talks. So we're working on getting some speakers right now. And yeah, just get things going. I see Houston doing a lot with the energy sector. I see Austin doing a lot with the builders and the devs. You even see Texas Slim out in Amarillo doing the beef initiative. So I say, like, everybody's doing their own little niche. I think it's really cool. So I'm just interested to see now what San Antonio is going to do and what Dallas is going to do. Dallas is a big market too. So yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And I know, I guess, I think it's Taylor Wimberly is the one that started organizing it, maybe in Fort Worth or Dallas or something along those lines. I know I've seen something where they're starting to get it going in Dallas as well. But yeah, man, so I grew up in Austin. And so, like, just hearing, you know, you list all everything that's going on is pretty funny because, you know, for me now I live in Florida, but now it's I see things going on, you know, all over the country. But you guys have so much going on in Texas that you listed what's going on in Austin, what's going on in Houston, you know, the stuff you're starting in San Antonio, and you still got stuff, room to grow in Dallas, which is obviously, you know, the third largest metropolis in the country, I think, behind like New York and LA. And so, like, on that note, like, how is you know, just being around all these Bitcoiners in Texas kind of helped you with your outlook and helped you like with everything, you know, especially even starting up your own meetup in San Antonio?
Oh man, just everybody's always, you know, in good spirits, good energy. That's one thing, you know, I joke and tell everybody the thing that got me coming to the first Austin Bitcoin meetup was I heard they were doing free chicken and beer. And I was like, what? I don't want to cook dinner tonight. So I ended up going. The first one was really cool. You know, I met Car, Kyle, everybody. It was already pretty big, I thought. And I mean, the energy, everybody was so cool meeting big time, you know, Bitcoin Twitter people. I had no idea who they were, having quality talks, quality conversations. And that's what really kept me was the quality. You know, I'd rather trade in my days of going to a bar and, you know, just kind of knocking off. I'd rather trade those in for, you know, Bitcoin meetups and Bitcoin hangouts, just because, you know, along with having a good time, you get quality conversations at that. And with that quality, you know, can come opportunity. And I just really liked it. The atmosphere, never experienced anything like it. And that's when I always ask, hey, is this going on in San Antonio? Like, I'm always down there, you know. And that's when they kept saying no, it kept falling apart. And I just really wanted to bring that energy and this type of thing to, you know, my home city. And, you know, here in Austin, they got it going so well. Being so close to those guys, I told them their hands are so well around Austin. I just want to help them extend those hands to San Antonio because it's only an hour away. You know, and through those extended hands, you know, we can get San Marcos, New Braunfels, Kyle, all the small cities in between, everybody can get on board too. And, you know, we can all come out pretty strong, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think that that's the awesome thing about Texas, you know, is it seems like a lot of people out there, it's not like a turf war where it's like, you know, Houston versus Austin or anything like that. I think everybody's kind of just pushing each other to, you know, become better and help build in the Bitcoin space. And it's absolutely awesome. And, you know, another thing I don't think people realize is that, you know, how close Austin and San Antonio are. But at the same time, too, like Austin, all these people are flocking there because, you know, Bitcoin is getting big. Everything's getting more expensive. So just naturally, Austin's going to have to expand out. Right. So, I mean, in that case, you know, you could start it in San Antonio and it could expand out in San Antonio and then they can just eventually merge, like you're saying. So what are your goals that you have kind of organizing this Bitcoin meetup in San Antonio? How do you kind of want it structured, or is it all kind of like free flow right now?
Right now, it's just all free flow. How do I want to structure? Well, it's not what I want, you know. It's what the plebs want. It's what the people want. You know, that's what happened naturally in Houston and naturally in Austin. So, just really letting the plebs figure out what they want to do, what the niche is going to be here. But I would definitely like to get us to get our hat in contention, you know, with Austin and Houston. And yeah, it's not a competition or anything, but I would definitely like to throw our hat in the ring to where, you know, now we're eye level rather than San Antonio just on the sideline looking, because we're right in the middle of these two big time cities and we're not so much a little city ourselves. So it's just more about getting the city into it, you know. Got a lot of pride in my hometown, and you know, I know we have a lot of hard workers down there. A concept that I'm really running with down in South Texas is San Antonio. South Texas is proof of work. We have some of the hardest workers in all of Texas, I believe. You know, a lot of my family's been to oil fields. A lot of my family's done, you know, a lot of blue collar work. I know a lot of friends done a lot of blue collar work. Still have a lot that are still in it. And if we can concentrate all that work into, you know, this thing, then, you know, who knows what we can do. You know, proof of work speaks for itself in this thing. So I just feel like that concept alone ties in with a lot of the culture, you know, big time Mexican culture down in San Antonio also. So that ties in. Have had a lot of success really with onboarding a couple of businesses downtown, just because they sell precious goods from Mexico, silver from Mexico. So it's like, oh, okay, well, do you do Bitcoin? You know, what part of Mexico? Oh, okay. So that's been pretty fun though so far.
That's awesome, man. So, it sounds like you're kind of like pioneering the movement in San Antonio, and that's absolutely awesome and inspiring too, you know. And I think like because you guys have so much influence in Austin, and like, you know, you can kind of point to that, like, hey, you know, I came from Austin, XYZ restaurant, whatever, accepts Bitcoin. Like, you know, I'd like to pay here. You know, you have Oshie, Michael Atwood up there too. So I actually just paid for my first meal in Bitcoin in Miami at Taquiza's. I bought some tacos and margaritas using Lightning Wallet and Ibex Pay and everything like that. So it was an awesome experience. It was really cool, and it was something that, you know, I wanted to do when I came down here, and I made like a 30-minute trip there and back just to do it. And I think a lot of Bitcoiners too would come to San Antonio, or like, you know, go when they go to San Antonio, go to these specific restaurants. So I think people really underestimate like how much marketing that does, because you know you have people like you and I who really are trying to put in that proof of work in, you know, the Bitcoin space as a whole, and then elevate everybody else who's doing it. And so I think, you know, as far as like small businesses goes and other things like that, it's a no-brainer in my book. It doesn't really cost anything to onboard them, but I'm having tough conversations to try to onboard people in Tampa because I don't have, you know, maybe a Austin or somebody close where I could point to. The closest that I have to is like maybe a few places in Miami. And so, are you finding that you think it's a little bit easier to onboard people because you have that influence in Austin, or do you think like, you know, you still kind of have I guess to bring that learning curve forward when you're trying to like onboard businesses?
To be honest, I'm a little surprised about Miami because I know they're very crypto friendly. So I'm kind of surprised on that. But I know it's words getting more out there. I know Oshie had their event this past year, Miami 2022, and got places onboarded. Had a couple, I think it was at Taquiza's that they had their event over there.
Yeah, it was at Taquiza's. Yeah. So, and the funny thing is like I didn't realize it, but I was staying like a block away from Taquiza's while I was in Bit or while I was at Bitcoin Miami. I just didn't even realize it. And so I was hearing about it, but I just never put two and two together. But I mean, it's an extremely easy process too for those who haven't ever done it. You can simply link a Lightning Wallet in Oshi. You could even do it through Cash App or something else. And then they just put up a QR code, you scan it, and boom, it sends over immediately. So it was a pretty cool experience, and I hope to onboard more businesses in Tampa, but I'm finding it to be a little difficult. Maybe I'm going to the wrong places, and somebody from Tampa hears me saying this, and I'll get somebody onboarded soon. But Yeah. So how's it going onboarding stuff for you? Are you going to places like that you go to frequently? Are you kind of doing it at every place you go? Like what's your kind of strategy on onboarding?
Well, to answer what you were saying earlier, as far as if it's easier since we're by Austin, I guess a little bit. You know, it's more credit to whenever I talk with the, you know, cybersecurity people down here, any of the programmers, when I mention Austin and, you know, big things they're doing and how we're only an hour away, it, you know, speaks to them like, hey, man, like we're right down the road from these guys and they're doing all this stuff. Like we need to jump on it, you know. So that kind of helps in that aspect. As far as adoption goes, what I've been doing whenever because I frequent between Austin and San Antonio, I'm half of the month I'm there, half of the month I'm here. So when I go down there, usually when I go to like a couple bars, just to do some work, you know, computer work or something, one of them will be a real big tech hub in San Antonio, but they don't take Bitcoin. So like, the bartender, it'll just be me and him, and I'll just be working and ask what I do. And I'll say, oh, founder of San Antonio Bitcoin Club, we're just going to bring education and events to the city. And then I bring up like, you know, how's this a tech hub? And y'all don't have any Bitcoin in here. Like, you know, we need to get that going. And, but like with him, like he'll let me talk it and we'll just talk, you know, finances and money and what's going on. And I'll let him talk and it's good conversations, Roberto. Shout out Roberto if he ever hears this. And but yeah, at the end, now I have him taking Bitcoin in Moon Wallet, and I set him up with Strike, and I got him going on Cash App. So now I'm like, yeah, man. Now anytime you know an event happens here, you can tell customers I take Bitcoin and I take you know dollars. What do you want to pay with? Kind of just plant that seed like that. You know, a lot of them have just been bartenders, really, bartenders and servers, because they experience, you know, money. They touch money, they handle money all the time, they have to manage it. So that's pretty much been the go-to right now. And I've met a couple CEOs and founders and all that, but nothing's really stuck so far. So we'll just kind of keep chugging along. And yeah, I actually got another one was a leather shop. The man had a sign up in Spanish saying, if you pay in cash for 10, but with 10 bucks, I mean, if you pay in cash, I'll give you 10% off. And I asked him like, hey, why is it in cash? And he was like, well, fees, MasterCard, Visa. So once he said that, I was like, oh, okay. Well, you know about remittances then. And we got into it like that. And I ended up buying a wallet off him with a Bitcoin wallet, P2P, just lightning, boom, you know, told him no refunds. This is yours. Explained like, had I used Visa or MasterCard, I could go out to my car, just get on my phone, call the bank and say, hey, I didn't buy that wallet, you know, fraud, somebody stole it. And I told the store owner, you know, now you're out of wallet and you lost $30. See how easy I could fraud you. So just get into people's hands on it, really. Got a little couple little things lined up here to get the public more engaged with using it. So it's going to be fun here soon.
Yeah, for sure. And then you should tell them too, if they have like a Twitter account or social media, just say that they accept Bitcoin and like their following and everything like that. It'll get pretty rapid and it'll grow and everybody, it'll kind of get on their radar, right? So, yeah, like I said, I made a special trip out to Tequiza just to do that. And we mentioned them a few times here in this podcast. Yeah, I mean, I think overall, it's just a lot of benefits. And I think businesses are going to start waking up and I'm kind of excited to see, you know, not only businesses start to onboard, but you onboarding a bunch in San Antonio. So good on you and good luck with all that. Now let's get into some of these stories. So we can't talk about Bitcoin without kind of mentioning the greater macro environment, at least in my opinion, because we've had, you know, inflation running rapid. You mentioned the 7% fees in some cases with American Express. I know Visa, MasterCard has about 3%. But now we're also having the Federal Reserve raise interest rates yet again. And so they raised it 75 basis points last meeting, which was like the highest in 40 years, I believe. And they did it again, 75 basis points. And so what raising this interest rate does is it makes it more difficult for people and businesses to acquire money and in turn raising interest rates on various loans, whether it's housing, car loans, et cetera. So what do you think about, I guess, all the overall like inflationary environment? You know, if you're not like a huge macro guy, you don't have to get into what you think about the Fed's decision, but do you think like what they're doing is going to help at all? Or do you think like, you know, at the end of the day, like it's going to be, you know, pretty bloody out in the streets and a pretty bad recession?
Man, it's pretty crazy, you know, living in these times right now, you know, with all the MMT happening and everything. You know, a lot of this stuff was all theory, you know, modern money, modern monetary theory, you know, all this stuff wasn't supposed to happen, stimulus. But yeah, I honestly think it's just crazy to see all this stuff like really happening, you know, to be able to do your own research and find out, you know, what's going on for yourself rather than just listening to the news and going with what they say, because, you know, the U.S. is really just doing what they know. You know, their playbook is not that big. And granted, it's written by people that, you know, Keynes was crazy. You know, and we're going off of crazy man's, you know, theories and ways. So, yeah, I mean, look what's going on. You know, everything's going kind of upside down right now. And, you know, just when I was looking into it earlier, just everybody saw this coming pretty much. Everybody was saying it was already priced in. It was already priced in. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, just the same story, just with a different cover. It's a little weird, but now that we have technology, it's kind of throwing a little kink in this playbook that they have, because it cuts out a lot of the BS. You know, it finds errors, it corrects things that are supposed to be fixed. So that's what the U.S. is having a hard time dealing with all this Bitcoin and all these crazy numbers going on. They don't know what to do, you know.
No, I agree with you. And I think the Fed's like kind of in between a rock and a hard place, right? So I think a big part of this recession that people aren't really talking about is that the businesses had to shut down, right? They had to shut down for a long period of time. So granted, they did print 60% of the money supply, but they also shut down the economy for like months at a time. And so, you know, everybody's kind of catching up, and then now you're letting businesses not have as much access to capital. I mean, like, I don't think like for one, that's really going to solve anything. I think that's going to make it even worse. And so, you know, I'm really worried about what's going forward, because I don't think that there's a clear path of the way out. And I think, you know, this raising interest rates is basically a last ditch effort in order to try to, you know, get away and allow inflation to kind of come down. But what we're seeing is that the U.S. dollar is becoming stronger, and other fiat currencies are becoming a lot weaker. So I don't know if that's necessarily like Powell's plan and the Federal Reserve's plan, but how do you kind of view it, where like, okay, the overall the dollar is kind of ripping compared to other fiat currencies, but at the same time, you know, in USD terms, Bitcoin is going up. And so like, you know, it's not shooting up price wise or anything like that. And I'm not normally a guy that really looks at price, but I think this is kind of an interesting time to, you know, sit back and analyze like, okay, the dollar's ripping, other fiat currencies are failing, but also Bitcoin's like maybe not ripping, but it is, you know, holding steady and moving up. So how do you kind of view Bitcoin when it comes to, you know, some its comparison to not only the U.S. dollar, but some of these other fiat currencies?
Well, the dollar ripping, I mean, the dollar's going to do what the dollar's going to do, because it's the world currency, right? Everybody has to use it. We still have to pay our bills in it. We still have to, you know, pay for our gas in it. We still have to do all this stuff with the dollar. As far as the Bitcoin price, I think it's interesting because I tell people, like, you know, the dollar ripping right now, it's because of inflation, right? It's because we're printing. So everything looks like it's going up in value, which is not what's happening. What's happening is your dollar is losing purchasing power, right? But But we can look at the charts and everyone's saying like, oh, the dollar is healthy. Look at it go. It's killing it. So I think that's really interesting on that. And then as far as Bitcoin in these times, it just falls on if you can, if you're able to change up unit of account. And a lot of people say they can, but if you're really truly able to let go of that dollar value and just look at Bitcoin, sat for sat, then it's a little easier to stomach that dollar price. And I know you say it's been going up and it has been going up, but that's because more people are starting to do their research and there's starting to be more use cases for people overseas to move their wealth. Some of the Ukraine stuff, all the Canadian stuff. I have friends from Canada. I've walked into the Pleb Lab and they were like, hey, I'm just moving all my life savings into Bitcoin because Canada's about to shut the banks down. It's like, but real casual. And it was just like, whoa, what's going on? So I think that's really what's boosting Bitcoin and keeping it there. Whether it drops, we'll see. Either way, I don't think it matters. They even say if Satoshi were to move his coins, it wouldn't matter. So along with that, I'm like, yeah, it wouldn't matter. I think the community and the connection and the network is so strong that people are really starting to see this the orange light.
Yeah, there
So
we go. Yeah, I agree 100%. I think people are starting to wake up and and kind of see the power of hard money and what Bitcoin brings to the table. But on another note, I think that a lot of FUD is kind of surrounding the overall Bitcoin and to a lesser extent crypto space. And so we'll get into some of that FUD here right now. So Coinbase, former Coinbase manager, is arrested for insider trading. So, former product manager Aishin Wahi, I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly. So, if I didn't, I apologize. But he was detained on the 21st of July for insider trading. He said he gained about $1.5 million using insider trading over 25 different cryptocurrencies. So, essentially, what he would do is he would buy a bunch of this crypto, it would get kind of leaked that Coinbase was thinking about listing it, then Coinbase listed it, and then he immediately dumped it. I guess, how do you think about like a lot of these people that run exchanges, right? Because we've seen a lot of these companies like Coinbase, like a Celsius, and like some of these others kind of fail because they were like over leveraging and kind of doing some shady things behind the financials. Yeah, I'd be curious to see like kind of what you think about those kind of exchanges, and I'll get into a little bit about my opinion of them.
With them, man, I know a lot of them, or some of them, start off as good-willed, good intention. But with great power comes great responsibility, right? And with absolute power comes with absolute corruption. They just get too over-leveraged. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen any of them so far have a Bitcoin reserve and be non-custodial. So I mean there's been a couple like anonymous ones where you can get like non-KYC stuff. But you have to kind of go digging. So I'm really surprised nobody's really emerged and sat on Bitcoin as their primary holdings because what I see what they're doing when they over leverage is, I'll give them $1,000 in Bitcoin and then they'll go and buy $1,000 some shit coin and then push it, pump it, and try to get that 10x, get the return. And prof, stay in the gambling, stay in the casino, give my, they'll still have my money, but then they'll have 10x on the side. But yeah, them doing that, it's wild to see. Yeah, I don't really know. Just people that fell into Celsius and all those other stuff. My stepdad, I was telling him, is it really worth that 4%, return? And one day I told him for months, get it off the internet, get it off the internet, pull your keys. And then all this stuff started happening. And shout out Matt Odell, I read it on Twitter. He was saying, is your 4% worth the risk of losing your whole coin? And I told my stepdad that, and it kind of hit him like, holy crap. And I was like, yeah, man, like you see all these stories about all this stuff happening, and I have a lot of friends that are in it, and they'll be like, oh, well, they're insured. Well, I know they're insured, but from what I've read, if you read in the past, if you look in history, Look how long it took Mt. Gox to return some of the funds. And I don't know how much got stolen to Mt. Gox, but I know a small portion of it's getting released here soon. And that's been almost, what, like 7, 8 years? So I tell them, like, just take full custody. You read all these horror stories, and that's what's very interesting, I think, of this space is nobody takes the time. A lot of the new people, they don't take the time to look into the history and see what happened in the past. So that's why you see a lot of these, shit coins rebrand themselves and then roll out as a new shit coin and saying they're doing all this other stuff, but it's still the same people behind it.
Yeah, and
So.
I agree with you 100%. But I think on the history note, one interesting thing is a lot of these people too realize that or think that, Bitcoin's only been around since 2009. So, there's not much history or there's not much stuff that goes on. And, like on that note, there are like significant things that have happened and that, are obviously have been repeated as well. Granted, I don't know how much is it going to be getting back from Mt. Gox. I believe it was like 50% of all the holdings when it came back, which, is I would say like if you've lost everything for that period of time, you probably thought that you were never getting any back. So if you get some back, I'm sure you're a little happy, but obviously it's not ideal, right? And so I think, you said on the insured part, I think like it's still such a new industry and it's not like really regulated like as well as it could be, right? So like the financial markets, granted, like people hate them and there's a lot of manipulation that go on it and everything, but it's quote unquote regulated, right? So like if somebody screws you out of a stock or somebody can't come back to you for losing your 401k or something like that, like the SEC somehow will find some money to be able to get that back to you. Whereas like in this area, they don't really, like Bitcoin and shitcoin, so they're not gonna necessarily help you out in that case. And so I think, people have learned like kind of like a hard lesson, and it's like you said, like with great power comes great responsibility. And all these people kind of got on this train and shot up and kind of it clouded their vision as to where, why they got into Bitcoin in the first place. I think, maybe they started off as Bitcoiners and then they saw so much money and so much lavish stuff that they kind of got a little flashy. And I mean, like, to be honest, like I saw a lot of the flash here at the mining conference that I'm at. Like when you walk up, at Bitcoin Miami, you have the big giant bull. And here at the Mining Disrupt conference, you have the world's largest Bitcoin miner, and it's a giant display. And then three Lamborghinis with girls and models taking pictures there in front of them. And it's like, okay, like that's really like not the grassroots movement that Bitcoin is really behind. It's for like the average person. And I think a lot of these big players, when I see all that and I see the flash, my immediate question is like, where's the substance? And that's how I feel like a lot of these exchanges are kind of getting is that they're kind of clouding everything by adding a lot of flash, adding a lot of shit coins. They're listing X coin, Y coin, shit coin here, shit coin there, and then it's like, okay, well, at the end of the day, you make most of your money off of Bitcoin. And you take the most fees, as in like Coinbase takes the highest fees compared to maybe most of the market. So like, what are you going to do? Are you going to lean into Bitcoin or like lean into the shitcoin casino? And unfortunately, it seems like they've made the wrong decision and leaned into the shitcoin casino to try to make an immediate impact, immediate buck. But it also, those violent swings up also cause violent swings down. And I think that's what we're seeing with a lot of these exchanges.
On the violent swings up and down, I saw a quote that I like to tell people, if you can't handle 80% drop, then you don't deserve a 400% gain, so.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100% there too, right? So it's all relative. And I think, like, too, I heard Corey Clipston on the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast say that during a 3-month period, there has never been a shitcoin that has outperformed Bitcoin more than one time, and except for one, which was Dogecoin. And Dogecoin outperformed with the initial meme when it first got in, and then when Elon was tweeting about it. And so, like even Ethereum, like it has the violent swings up, but then the violent swings down cause it to get underperform Bitcoin at the end of the day. So although it might have had like a quick run up, I think over time Bitcoin is always going to be the winner. And so on some additional FUD notes, Three Arrows Capital. So Three Arrows Capital has funded a lot of these shitcoin casinos. For the first time, they actually spoke out. So they were kind of on the run. There was documents that came out that said, you know, they spent $50 million to buy the biggest yacht, and their lawyers couldn't get a hold of the founders. But both Zhu and Kyle Davies went on an interview on Bloomberg and stated that basically they lost a bunch of money because they were heavily involved in the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, Terra's Luna, which also obviously had that giant fall from like a couple hundred dollars to well under a cent, and from UST, the Tether tokens. So they claimed that they lost over $200 million in the Luna crash. And that was the straw that finally broke the camel's back. I'd be curious to hear, like, you know, what do you kind of think of this whole situation? You know, because 3 Hours Capital, although they kind of had this big demise, they were able to fund a lot of these missions off the ground. So I'm trying not to give you a leading question, but what do you think of these 3 Arrows Capital, I guess, you know, sketchiness going around and all these different, you know, characters involved in this?
I mean, they just over-leveraged themselves. You know, you said it earlier. It basically sounds what happened. I was reading about how with USDT, they possibly let somebody in that leaked information or, you know, rug pulled them or something like that. But yeah, I just think they just overleverage themselves. That's what happens when you start messing with all these shit coins. You know, you hear a lot of people talk about the casino. And yeah, they just got burned. I mean, if that's what it takes for you to learn your lesson, that's what it takes. You know, that's what Max Kaiser says, you know, and a lot of people are going to have their faces melted off to learn a lesson. And, you know, that right there is, you know, an example of it. You know, melting your face off can have different meanings, of course. But yeah, for some people to be able to see the light. And with them, yeah, it was crazy how they didn't talk for like 5 weeks. And yeah, everyone thought they were on the run. The lawyers were saying they weren't, but then they would say they don't know where they're at. But yeah, I just think they were just too over leveraged, man. Again, I'm sure they have good intentions, as everybody in big business would say, right? But yeah, I just think they just got caught with their hand in the cookie jar, kind of like a Lehman Brothers thing. And, you know, they're one to fall. They're not going to be the biggest one to fall. I think there's going to be worse, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think like the one thing about bear markets is it kind of clearing out the bad apples and the people that, like you said, over-leverage themselves. And you know, it's rumored that 3 Arrows Capital still owes $3.5 billion to 27 different companies, including $2.3 billion to Genesis Global Trading. I'm sorry. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, if 3 Arrows Capital owes you money, I don't think you'll ever see it. I think, you know, they did fund a lot of these things, but they were extremely reckless. And like you said, or like I said earlier, it's a lot of flash and not really much substance behind it. I think they even bought like some like Bored Ape or like, you know, NFT with a dick on it or something like that, and spent like millions of dollars on it just to do that. So it's like they tried to like jump on this train, and it's like, what, like, just step back and like think about how stupid this is. Like, if you don't, like, it's obviously gambling and there's no real substance behind it. So I hope for, you know, everybody's sake in there that they didn't lose a significant amount of their holdings, especially the plebs that got hurt in this. You know, the businesses, it's kind of hard to feel bad for them because, you know, they had the big run up and they could have been more prepared for something like this, but unfortunately they weren't. So I just hope for the people that like lost their jobs and other things like that, they kind of end up on their feet. Because I think, you know, although we're talking about the big players, I think at the end of the day, the little guys are the ones that get hurt the most in a situation like this. So yeah, but on that note, speaking of the little guys, the Senate is proposed a bill to eliminate taxes on $50 worth of Bitcoin transactions, eliminate capital gains, excuse me. And so this is another bill introduced. It's introduced by Senators Patrick Toomey, a Republican from Pennsylvania, and Kyrsten Sinema, a Democrat from Arizona, and it's known as another crypto bill, similar to the one that Cynthia Lummis of Wyoming, and I believe a senator out of the state of New York has proposed, except that one was for up to $200. So what do you think of these bills that kind of allow these smaller amounts of payments to be, you know, transacted and then eliminate capital gains as far as it goes, like, you know, for the businesses and the consumer?
I've been listening to that one a little bit here and there, and I personally think it would be good in a way, because it would just eliminate that excuse for people to be like, well, there's going to be a tax on it, or, well, I can't cash it out, or, well, it's a taxable event. So that would open up a lot of people's eyes, especially in finance 1.0 or in legacy finance. So that would be cool as far as, you know, buying a cup of coffee, buying a pizza, everyday purchases. On the bad side, though, it's like, how much regulation do you really want in this space? You know, that's what some of us, you know, that's what we're here for, because, you know, no one can stop you from moving your wealth, you know, or regulate any of it. And, you know, with this, there's some type of regulation coming. So, I mean, it can be a good or a bad thing. I think it'll be cool, though, just so to eliminate that excuse for people to deny your Bitcoin.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think, you know, regulation, it's going to come regardless, right? So as long as it's like friendly to Bitcoin, I think is fine. Although, you know, I don't really necessarily like it. I think let the free market kind of decide, eliminate capital gains is one step. To kind of let the free market decide what they want to transact in, right? So I think, you know, like you said, there's already things that you can accept fiat over Lightning and never touch any sort of Bitcoin, like, you know, apps like Strike and other things, Cash App, what have you, allow you to do stuff like that already, which is great. But I think, like I said earlier, like I went and bought tacos for the first time and that was under $50. And so that would be something where, you know, if Takiza has to pay capital gains, or if I do and I go to Takiza every single day, like that kind of adds up, right? But it's obviously more beneficial for me, the consumer, to kind of help, because like things like Oshi like give you incentives, and, you know, the businesses give you incentives. But it's also more advantageous for the small businesses that have been hurting so much with all these lockdowns and the rapid inflation and like the labor forces that, you know, just don't really want to work in a restaurant for, you know, cheap amounts anymore. They want to, you know, get paid a lot of money and not work as much. So I think overall, it just helps kind of mitigate some of these headaches that they got to deal with. And, you know, at the end of the day, not 100% of your customers are going to come in and pay with Bitcoin, right? Maybe 10% if you're lucky, but it gets you some publicity and, you know, could potentially help out with a lot of things. And so I think $50 is kind of a minuscule amount, but it's a step in the right direction. And like, I think we need to start taking some of these steps, and especially if we want the United States to not really fall behind in this aspect, I think like this is something that needs to be done.
I'd heard somebody talking about, you know, and if it does get passed or if it doesn't get passed, if it does get passed, that it'll be interesting because, or if it doesn't get passed, it'd be interesting because if it's still being used and we're still getting taxed on it, then it's like, hey, you're getting taxed on a dollar that's depreciating. You're getting taxed on, you know, a current that is depreciating. I'm sorry. And, you know, it's going to get the people, and they're going to be like, you know, well, how do I get out of this, you know, little conundrum of inflation, you know, all these rates? There's no way I can outrun this. It's like investing. I tell people, you know, saving shouldn't be hard. Right now, we're expected to keep up with 22% inflation. It's probably even higher than that, probably like around 30%. So you got to get at least a 30% return on your investments to keep your savings. And I tell people, like, you know, as far as Bitcoin goes, it's like, no, just stack your coin and chill. Saving shouldn't be that hard. You see how easy that sounds? Just buy Bitcoin. You have experts that go to school and learn charts and stock to flow. They learn all these different things, and even they get it wrong, And now you're expecting, lawyers, doctors, nurses, bakers, gas salesmen. You're expecting all these regular people to expect to learn all this too, So just to kind of put it into perspective for people, I say, it shouldn't be that hard. You should just be able to put it to the side and it should grow, right? Or appreciate.
Exactly. And I think, you're nailing it on the head there, right? I think there's a bigger underlying issue where a lot of these people are going to have to, like just the average Joe is going to have to come home and not only come back after their job and relax, they have to come back and become like a stock trader, or they have to come back and become like an expert stock picker or investor or everything like that. Because, granted, it helps grow everybody's wealth. And, at the end of the day, it's really beneficial for people to kind of realize how to grow their wealth. But it is kind of stressful when you're like, all right, I'm looking at my stock portfolio and like I have to do this because of inflation. I'm picking X stock and it's going down a bunch and I don't understand. Whereas, like, if you understand the fundamentals of Bitcoin, you could just DCA in every single day and just kind of sit back and chill. And, eventually, if you have a long enough time horizon, and you believe in the technology, which many of us do, it's gonna go up. And so obviously that's gonna be something that's makes it a lot easier too, where it's like, just like you said, it's almost foolproof, where if you invest in Bitcoin and you hold on to it for 5 years, I don't think anybody's ever lost any money. So, and as in USD terms. So I think the more people that kind of find Bitcoin and get into it, the better. And I think eliminating capital gains would be a step in the right direction for that. And so, on that note, on more policy, so El Salvador obviously is the first country that has gone and made Bitcoin legal tender, but there's been a lot of FUD that's been spread around about El Salvador. President Nayib Bukele took to Twitter to kind of dispel the rumors that El Salvador was going to default on their debt due to their Bitcoin holdings and their Bitcoin-backed bonds. So he detailed a plan that they're going to purchase their own sovereign debt bonds from 2023 to 2025 at market price over a period of about 6 weeks. And they understand that purchasing over these 6 weeks is going to increase the price, but they have plenty of liquidity to do so. So how do you feel about the whole El Salvador position? Do you think that there's a lot riding on El Salvador's success when it comes to Bitcoin as legal tender? Or do you think that, at the end of the day, people still look at El Salvador as kind of like a third world country, so they're not going to really wake up and notice until El Salvador becomes maybe closer to one of those first world powers?
I feel like they may be having some short-term problems right now, but in the long run, it will pay off. Just because they Bukele did realize the dollar was the problem. He looked around and wondered, why are we still a third world country? We have such hard workers, we have all these resources, we sell everything dirt cheap. What's going on? So him fixing the root cause of that, I think it's going to take some years because, it took El Salvador years to get where they're at right now. It's not going to happen overnight. It was cool to see their GDP grow by like 3%, I think, in the first 6 months or a year that they bought Bitcoin. So that was cool to see. As far as like, I think it's important. Yes, you got a lot of people going down there, A long-term play that has been working out for them that I read about is a lot of tourism, a lot of investors, entrepreneurs going down there. I even myself want to make the pilgrimage down there myself just to check it out. But I think that was a good play too. That brought a lot of attention to them. Other than that, I would have never wanted to go to El Salvador. That wasn't on my radar at all. Now that's like my number two spot to go right now. But I think it was a good move on his part. And if they succeed, then they'll definitely catch the eye of a lot of people. I know a lot of people that still don't know what's going on down there. And, it kind of blows my mind. It's like, what are y'all watching? And, not to say any names, but some of these people are the ones that, watch like the Kardashians and all this stuff. So it's like, oh, okay. Well, But yeah, I just think, just give them, let them have some time, and yeah, just keep those Bitcoin, that Bitcoin reserve going. I think they need a full custody it though, because I've heard that they don't full custody their all their reserves or something like that.
Yeah, and actually, I was in a Twitter Spaces with BTC BAP, so shout out BAP and the team at Casa, and that was like kind of like an interesting little thought experiment that we were going through. It's like, all right, if a country is holding Bitcoin, right, and they do something along the lines where they have just one private key and they do the self custody that way, essentially that our entire country's power is like relying on this one person, right? So it could be something where they have like, it kind of divides power, right? Where they do multi-sig and they do, even more than just like three keys or something like that. And they set it up where, maybe there's 10, 20, 30, 40 for people in power. And, you need a certain percentage in order to move that money. And so that could be something where, at the end of the day, you have multiple people making some decisions and it's not just one at the end of the day. Where I obviously, one isn't making these decisions right now, but it's kind of like an interesting little thought experiment. I wonder where that's going to go and develop in the future. Because I think, like right now, like you said, we're still early on. People are holding it on exchanges. Countries are holding it on exchanges. So I hope to see that more people kind of, take power and take that. But yeah, I mean, I've talked at lengths on, some of my other shows about El Salvador, and I think my opinion of them is like, granted, they're gonna have some bumps in the road, but at the end of the day, it's positive marketing, kind of like you're saying. Like when you're a poor country, they do have beautiful aspects of it, but as an American, you probably hear about Bali, you probably hear about, some of these other like tropical places, but not El Salvador. And so I know a lot of people that have gone there that probably would have never gone there before. And I personally have talked to a lot of people that have visited there, and I asked them like, hey, before Bitcoin, would you have gone there? And like almost 99% of the time, it's no. So their tourism drastically increased. The marketing behind El Salvador and tourism has gone up. It seems like Bukele is kind of cleaning it up there. Granted, like he's not perfect or anything like that, so I don't think he should be held up on this pedestal. But I think, the move for Bitcoin overall has been positive and will continue to be positive. But I think the interesting thing about Bukele is he's just kind of like a pleb like us. Like he kind of continually stacks. He tweeted out at one point that, they bought like 80 or 90 Bitcoin, which for a country isn't a really significant amount, but it showed that he's kind of DCAing in. And that kind of leads me into my last story where the stack chain movement was kind of started lately on Twitter. It was started by Arizona and HODL. So shout out to Arizona and HODL. He started moving, basically tweeted out this saying, no matter what, how his pockets are looking or anything like that, he buys Bitcoin on that day. And so this started the hashtag stack chain movement. And it went really, really viral. We had a lot of people kind of following that chain and doing that. So how do you feel about just like overall the Bitcoin community, like kind of like just joining together and just banding up and, stacking Bitcoin all together?
Just one of those cool little things that you get when you enter this space, and you understand what's going on, little community aspect of it. In a sense too, we're all building each other up because we're all buying at the same time and adding on to the stack chain. So I think it's a really cool viral movement. It's kind of like any other viral movement you see, but now this one's more like, okay, well, put your value where your mouth is, Let me see the screenshot. Let's add it.
Yeah.
I was looking for that. It was pretty cool the way they were saying and talking about it.
Oh yeah, exactly. And it got a lot of publicity too because of how many people were getting on it, and some of these big name accounts that even got on it too, I think was just awesome. So I think like, at the end of the day, the coolest thing that I've learned about or that I've enjoyed about Bitcoin space is that no matter how big your following is, how big your account is or whatever, there's people and plebs working hard in the Bitcoin space that have zero followers and then have 100,000 followers. And at the end of the day, everybody can kind of get their notice and get this thing kind of started and join the movement. So, if you go through the stack chain movement, you saw like a lot of accounts had a bunch of followers, but you know, and that kind of gained the traction. But you know, at the end of the day, it's the small guys that kind of jump on board too. So I think for the plebs to kind of keep continuing and stacking, it was an awesome thing to see. So I hope to see more of that in the future. Maybe we get it like going like once a month or something like that, especially in this bear market.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was a really cool thing to see. And you know, you meet people and you could possibly meet one of your best friends, and then you meet them at the conference and it's like, oh, I've been talking with you these last, you know, 8 months. That's you, you know. So it's a pretty cool experience to do some things like that online and get everybody going.
Yeah, awesome stuff. All right. Well, G, you've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much. Why don't you tell people where to find you and about the San Antonio Bitcoin meetup, like where it is and what dates you're planning on having it?
Yeah, well, the club, we run it every second Thursday of the month. Falls between BitDevs and Awesome Bitcoin Club. So that way you can every week plan out every Thursday to do a Bitcoin event. And then the last Thursday is obviously Houston. So, yeah, we do the second Thursday of every month. Right now we're just meeting up at bars downtown. Just going to local spots just in and around the city. I want to keep it centrally located right now, just so everybody from around San Antonio can have a central hub to meet at, rather than have to drive to Austin or drive to Houston. But yeah, so what else? You can find me on Twitter at @MoneyToBeMurdered. I'm sure you'll put it in the description as well. And then, yeah, San Antonio Bitcoin Club. You can find us on Twitter as well. We also have a website, heavily, how do I say this? Me and the plebs heavily involved with it, always keeping up with the Twitter, just talking, reaching out with people, always talking Bitcoin. If you're ever in San Antonio, ever in Austin, you know, you ever want to do some stuff with some Bitcoiners, hit us up on the Telegram, San Antonio Bitcoin Club. And yeah, nothing like hanging out with plebs, you know, just drinking a beer, eating some pizza or tacos or something. So don't be shy. Come on out.
Yeah, man. Awesome stuff. And I think you have probably one of the coolest Twitter handles on the block. So have money to be murdered by. It'll be in the description and in the show notes and everything like that. What's the San Antonio Bitcoin Club website before I forget?
You can Google San Antonio Bitcoin Club, all one word, and it'll pop up. SanAntonioBitcoinClub.com.
Perfect. All right. Well, go check it out. And yeah, go attend one of these meetups and go support G. G, thank you so much. And let's stay connected. I'm going to come out to Central Texas eventually, come back home, and I'll have to stop by San Antonio and the Austin Bitcoin Club and everything they got going on in there as well.
Yeah, man, for sure. Looking forward to it.
All right, man. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you, too.